It's a funny thing, isn't it? We bring the lights up a wee bit, don't we? But we were all in the same place, and the same thing was happening to everyone, yeah? But no one's agreeing on how long it was that we were waiting. How did it feel? Yeah. Confused, yeah. And it's a wee bit unfair, because we didn't say that was going to happen. So, and that's not very fair, actually. And that's why it was only 3 minutes. But that sense of what's going to happen next. Like, we're so used in church to there being the next thing happening. You know, we're going from singing to notices to praying to hearing from God's word. And it's one thing after another. And actually, it's really unusual to take that length of time and nothing happen. So it was a wee bit unfair, and it's my fault, and I apologise. But I was sitting there with my timer. It was 3 minutes, exactly. And the first 20 seconds were the most fidgety. So after, you know, there was 10 seconds of what's going on, and then between 10 and 20 seconds, there was a lot of muttering and fidgeting and what's going on. And after about a minute, it got a bit stiller. It's interesting. And there's still that, what's going on here? But it doesn't happen very often, does it? That sense of actually there's nothing going on. I'm going to see if my clicker's going to work. Derek, is this on? It's green on the side, and I'm clicking away. There we go, we're away. This is the stuff we're maybe a wee bit more used to. These kind of phrases. Buy now, fast food, instant credit. Hurry, for a limited time only. And we're in the season of hurry, for a limited time only. Get it all done. Buy it quick. And then once you've bought it all and given it to everyone and unwrapped it, get straight back to shops the next day and buy it again at half the price for somebody else. Why wait? This idea that you shouldn't save up for stuff. You should just buy it and then figure out how you're going to pay for it afterwards. So why wait? And I started thinking, actually, maybe that's the key. Because it's this ironic, why wait? You can have it now. But why should we wait? Please wait while your computer is updated. Please wait while you're redirected. Just listen to how you're feeling as you read these. Please wait while your order is processed. And here's the kicker. Please wait for our next available customer services representative. No! So we're in this kind of culture where waiting is a sign that something's going wrong. So there was a scandal last year because some people had to wait three whole weeks to get hold of the new iPad. Imagine. And it made the headlines. And in the midst of this, psychologists have been doing research and they're finding a growing body of evidence to suggest that the more technology that we have that saves time, the more impatient we're getting. And the stuff that's supposed to help and supposed to be good causes intense frustration. When I was doing this very slide this afternoon, for some reason, when I clicked on the next thing, it would disappear. And I had a good 10 minutes of, what is going wrong? This thing's supposed to make it easier to communicate, and here I am. Couldn't even get the next point up. But one of the bits of research that amazed me that's just come out of Toronto is they would show a fast food logo, and it wasn't just one fast food logo. It would be any of a range of fast food logos for 12 milliseconds. Now, 12 milliseconds is too fast for you to see it. So your brain's registering it, but you wouldn't have said that you'd seen it. It's that quick. And just by doing that, they had two groups of people. One group who just had a little white box that would flash up and disappear, and the other group that had the logo that flashed up and disappeared. And they wouldn't have known which group they were in. But then they were asked just to read a paragraph and type it up. And they found that the group who'd been shown the fast food logo did the task 20% faster than the other group. And it's a growing area of psychological research, of this idea of kind of priming, that you get this association in your brain that's not even conscious, but it's going on. And it predisposes you to act in a certain way. Now, this is not the fast food corporations doing something to us. It's not like it's part of some evil agenda. It's just a fact that because we associate fast food with saving time, it seems somehow that gets distorted in our heads to haste and impatience. So it's the same thing. It's supposed to be about saving time, but it ends up being about haste and impatience. So, you know, there's a problem when someone writes a book about it. This guy's a professor of economics, and he's looking at the importance of waiting, the art and science of delay. Now, of course, I didn't have time to read the book, so I just read the article in the New York Times about it. What does that say? But it was in that article that he pointed to this research that I then did go and read. And this is just a wee quote from the end of this article. When they looked at, not just at reading, but they looked at a whole pile of other similar tasks. So buying decisions, they would say, would you like a 2-slice toaster or a 4-slice toaster? And the group that had been shown the logos wanted the 4-slice. They wanted the 3-in-1 shampoo and not just the normal shampoo. The quick drying paint and not the, there's something going on that there was a predisposition towards the time-saving stuff. They're saying it's possible that something about this fast food culture extols saving time, but it might not change just the way that people eat, but also fundamentally alter the way that we experience events. It's a bit incredible, isn't it? So they say you experience all these different things that didn't used to be associated with time. The idea of leisure, of going for a walk, of smelling the flowers. We're now associating that with a kind of a booked-in time in our diaries and a slot, and it's becoming viewed through the lens of impatience. So this is all going on. And here we come to Advent. And this is a cut and paste from the dictionary. The coming or arrival, especially of something extremely important, the advent of the computer. The second definition of Advent, the liturgical period preceding Christmas. Beginning in Western churches on the fourth Sunday before Christmas and in Eastern churches in mid-November, and observed by many Christians as a season of prayer, fasting and penitence. Or the second coming of Jesus at the Incarnation. See, second coming. And there was just something in that, reading through that and going, right, so it's either about something extremely important or it's about a Christian festival. And maybe there's not such a difference. The coming or arrival, especially of something extremely important, Jesus. And this is the kind of crazy claim that Christians are making, that there's something about the arrival of Jesus that's made an incredible difference to everything, beyond even the advent of the computer. But if we're in this kind of culture which doesn't really value waiting, which finds waiting to be a problem that needs to be solved and fixed, and yet we're to come towards Advent, which is a season of waiting, then it's no wonder that it's tricky. And I don't know if it's just me, but there's been previous Advents where you sit and you come to church and you feel terrible that the week's been a blur of getting all the work done, of all the work social events, all the family stuff that's going on, and nativity plays and costumes that have to be here and there, and presents that have got to be bought. And then you just come just feeling, oh, I wish I'd made more of it. And then maybe somebody stands up and says, oh, maybe you should have made more of it. So I want to take a wee different take on this and use our imaginations. Because I think there's something in our imaginations that's exactly what Advent's about. I'm not saying it's all made up, far from it. But if we can use our imagination, imagine that Jesus hadn't yet been born. Imagine it's not actually happened. And we're waiting for a Messiah. We're sitting here in the midst of all the great things that go on around us, and yet all this sense of dissatisfaction and unease and angst that there is as well. And this sense of longing for someone to come and do something about it. And as we start to do that, we're right in a good place to start reading bits from Isaiah, which you'll know all about. I'm feeling intimidated then after your Old Testament conference. But it can be really hard sometimes to think ourselves back in time. It's hard enough going back to the time of Jesus, but to go back even further to the point when Isaiah was around and Jesus was way in the future. And Isaiah's saying, wait. And so you read these scriptures that we have. Let's see if I can keep going. And they have this word for wait in the Hebrew scriptures. And more than half of all the times that this word for waiting that's used in the Hebrew scriptures, you'll find them in Isaiah or the Psalms. So they're the big books of waiting. It's Isaiah and the Psalms. And this Hebrew word kava that's used for waiting, when you use it literally, it's about binding a cord. You know, when you take different strands and you put them together into a cord that's stronger. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. Well, that's kava. But it then came to have the second meaning, a figurative meaning, a kind of a metaphor that you would use it, about waiting. Now it's 8 o'clock. To wait, to hope, to expect. That's what it means. But there's a connection between the literal and the figurative. It's not that, you know, when you talk about someone being dead and you're saying they're actually dead, but then there's a figurative way in which we say, oh, I'm dead, as in I'm really in trouble. But there's a connection between the two, isn't there? Not that they're completely unconnected. So we come to this word waiting and we think of it as something passive. And actually, it's tied up as a word in terms of something active. It's you're not just waiting. But it's a hopeful expectation. You know, it's not sitting at the bus and just letting the buses go past. It's, when's my bus coming? So it's to wait in hopeful expectancy. We want something to happen. And this is where Isaiah goes with it. I'll wait for the Lord, who's hiding his face from the descendants of Jacob. I'll put my trust in him. Yes, Lord, walking in the way of your laws, we wait for you. Your name and renown are the desire of our hearts. Yeah, the Lord belongs to be gracious to you. Therefore, he will rise up to show you compassion. For the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are all who wait for him. Isn't that nice? Nice words about waiting. And then you discover the context in which Isaiah is saying these words, and it's probably one of the most tumultuous periods in Israel's pretty tumultuous history. They'd just been taken over by the Assyrians. So they've been conquered again. And all their ideas about what it was to worship God and to go to Jerusalem and to be the people of God and have this sense of being special and worthwhile are in pieces. Literally and figuratively in pieces. And the walls are getting destroyed. And folk are being carried off into exile. And other folk are being left behind. And here's Isaiah, and he's got the cheek to say, wait. And you can imagine how that's going down. No, something's got to be done today, now. We're in a hole. We need someone to rescue us now. Blessed are all who wait for him. It was hard then. Really hard thing to hear, I think, in that situation. When you're longing for someone to come along and give these guys a kicking. And what are we to wait? But it's not a surrender. It's not a wait which is like, well, just go with the flow. We'll just have to put up with this. This is as good as it's going to get. No. We wait for you because your name and your renown are the desire of our hearts. There's something in the people of Israel going, we have to wait on God because we long to see God's ways established in our midst. Suddenly we're not so far away from that. This might be a passage that you're more familiar with at Christmas from Isaiah. People walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor. Mighty God. Everlasting Father. Prince of Peace. That's what they were waiting for. And of course, we associate that with Handel's Messiah. We associate it with Christmas, and we associate it with the birth of Jesus. He's the child that's born. He's the son that's been given. But that wasn't the reality for the people living at the same time as Isaiah. There were 680 years between the time that Isaiah died and the birth of Jesus. And there's another 30 years to go between the birth of Jesus and the start of his ministry. There's this crazy thing about Christmas where we're celebrating this child. And as Andy knows right now, a newborn baby is not the most valuable member of society in terms of what they can contribute. They scream, they sleep, and they fill their nappies. And then they eat, and they repeat. That's it. It's just a little bag of need. And yet, we were all those little bags of need. And so you're looking at this newborn baby and thinking, in 30 years' time, they'll be a grown man, a grown woman. But right now, they're completely dependent. So even that point when the wise men and the shepherds and everyone piles in and says, here's the King of the Jews. Great. Well, it's not going to be today then, is it? The next week's not looking very likely. And then it's another 400 years before Christianity comes to Scotland. You think your broadband's slow. I don't understand God's sense of timing a lot of the time, but that's very, very different to mine. I don't wake up in the morning and think, well, in another 680 years, what I do today might be of some value. It's incredible, isn't it? So I think there's something about Advent that's about an imaginative act of hopeful waiting. We're trying to imagine ourselves back to what it was like and imagine ourselves back to the time of Isaiah. And it's great to read those passages and say, well, what would it have been like? Trying to imagine it so that there's a better connection between that situation and our own. And then we start to, the verses really start to mean something then. So we wait. Accepting that we're not very good at it. Accepting that waiting can be incredibly frustrating. We wait with shepherds. For the shepherds, a manger's nothing unusual. The context for them was completely normal. It's the wee bit on the hillside with the angel that's a bit more out of the box for them. Whereas for the wise men, you've got these learned gentlemen from the east who end up surrounded with cow muck and straw all over their nice robes. As I'm going through this list, who is it that you want to imagine yourself with? Who do you want to kind of identify with and try and think, what did it smell like for them? What did it look like for them? And Elizabeth, the old woman who'd longed for a child the whole of her life, and finally, out of the blue, it happens. And a baby kicks in her stomach when she sees her cousin. I think it's maybe one of the happiest times of her life, that point of pregnancy. With this baby kicking away and her husband not saying anything because he was mute, because he didn't believe it would happen. Or Simeon at the temple when Jesus is presented as a baby. Finally, I've seen it. Or Joseph, who had in his mind to divorce her quietly. He had his plan and he was waiting to carry it out. Didn't happen. Or Mary, carrying the Messiah in her belly. I mean, you start to imagine it. I don't know if you saw the BBC adaptation of The Nativity that was on a couple of years ago, but that was one of the bits for me that completely, there was something about that actress, the way she played it, this kind of combination of naivety and innocence and faith that kind of brought it all to life for me. But what must it have been like? And so this season of Advent, we know how it ends, we know what happens, and we know what Christmas Day is supposed to be all about. But what was it like for those shepherds and those wise men, or for Elizabeth or Simeon, or Joseph or Mary on the first? 24 days to go. Maybe there's a way in for thinking about the next wee while. Because for Mary, the angel appears and says, you're going to have this child, and you're going to call him Jesus. But it doesn't happen immediately. She has to carry the child. pregnancy is this time of waiting. And waiting. And waiting. And waiting. And there's things like that for each of us. Things where we felt something rising up in us of responding to God in so many different kinds of ways of thinking, yeah, okay. With Mary, we're saying, let it be to me according to your will. Which is one of the most dangerous things you can say. And we say it all the time in the Lord's Prayer. And if we took a moment to think about it, there should be a health warning in that bit. Your will be done. But then it doesn't happen straight away. It never does. But Isaiah knew about this. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smouldering wick he will not snuff out. In faithfulness he'll bring forth justice. He will not falter or be discouraged till he establishes justice on the earth. That's part of the amazing promise of Advent. That point when we feel like we've burned the candle at both ends. That point when we feel at the end of ourselves. And it doesn't just happen at this time of year, but it does seem to happen a lot at this time of year. It's not over. It's not done yet. And that tentative longing for the light to grow again is why we wait. We wait in darkness because we're longing for light. We're in need of rescue and we're longing for life. That's no different. No different to the time of Christ, and it's no different to the time of Isaiah. But we can learn from them something about waiting. So just to help with that, I thought that's why we're having the time of worship towards the end rather than the beginning. Because it's a way of expressing our longing for light. And as we worship, you'll see there's tinfoil here and a bunch of candles. And what there is on each of the wee candles, it just says wait. So what we can do, if you'd like, is come up and take a candle and just light it and put it on the tinfoil. Put it on the tinfoil, please. But then at the top here, there's another candle, and it's one to take home and not light till Christmas Day, because we're in a season of waiting. And just, if that helps, to have a reminder, put it somewhere that you'll see it. By the kitchen sink or at your desk or somewhere, by your bed. To have that reminder to take home that we're waiting. We're waiting for the light. We're imagining what it's like. Does that make sense? Is that right? So you can pick up a candle to light and then pick up a candle to take home and not light. John, do you want to come back and we'll sing as we do this? Let's pray. God, I thank you that we don't wait in darkness forever. We thank you that your light has come. But God, I pray for each of us here. You know the situations that we're in and the waiting that we have to do. And I pray that your Spirit would speak to us. Whether it's as we sit or whether it's as we come and light a candle, express our longing for your light to blaze. God, be with us.